This is Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin universe.
Stanford 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
This is
Atenea Americana.
Bilingual house of culture on the air and online.
Radio
Atenea Americana.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Bienvenidos.
Atenea Americana.
Welcome. Bienvenidos.
From Stanford to the world.
Today, the rate of new entrepreneurship is highest among Latinos. This, according to the Kauffman Foundation, a leading nonprofit focused on advancing entrepreneurship. To talk about this topic, we have invited Remy Arteaga. Arteaga manage a collaboration between Stanford University and a nonprofit known as the Stanford Latino Entrepreneurship Initiative. He was born in Peru, grew up in the state of New York, and is an engineer from the University of Rochester. He has an MBA from the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute with a specialization in entrepreneurship and innovation. But he is also a graduate from Harvard University John F. Kennedy School of Government, specializing in nonprofit management and fundraising. He has a vast experience in the topic of entrepreneurship in first hand, but also has written and studied widely on the topic. Today, he will tell us more about Latinos in entrepreneurship and about new programs that Stanford University is opening to help level the field in innovation. Stay with us. Hello, and here we are in Atenea Americana, and today we're going to talk about entrepreneurship, and we're going to talk about Latinos in entrepreneurship, and for that, our guest today is Remy Arteaga. Welcome to Atenea Americana.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about your new projects? Or that sounds so interesting.
Oh, sure. So I was born in Peru, a little town called Chiclayo. And my family, my mother, my father, just like so many immigrants, decided that the U.S. was a great place to pursue a dream, the American dream. And so they came to New York, and I grew up in this town called Queens. And I always tell people New York is one of the hardest places for immigrants to land into. It seems like it has so many resources, but they're so difficult to get at. And my parents didn't know about any of them. And we also landed in a really tough area. You know, so I remember growing up, I was exposed to, I think, marijuana the first time when I was like 7 years old. And I knew what LSD and other drugs were by the time I was 10, 11 years old. And so, it's remarkable. And I tell people, around here, people look for internships, right? The only internships there were really around illegal activities. Those were the internships that were available. So you had to figure out something else. And my father loved education, and he really drove that in me. And I think that's common in a lot of Latino families, you know? And and I got out. I was able to go to University of Rochester, get an engineering degree. And then I did what so many Latinos do in that situation, try to go for the best company you can get to. And at that time, General Motors was the number one company in the world. So I went there. And it was great. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot of business while I was there. And then around 4 years to 6 years, I started feeling an itch that I wanted to leave to do my own thing. And I didn't call it entrepreneurship, but that's really what it was.
Yeah.
So I left GM to my father's chagrin. Mi hijo ingeniero, ¿qué estás haciendo? Right? He was so upset. I didn't understand it, but I left and I began to launch startups. And mm-hmm. I was fortunate. My first startup was very successful. Mm-hmm. And then I did an internet startup and that was successful. Mm-hmm. And then I did my third startup and it failed miserably. And so I drove it into the ground and I didn't understand why. So then that took me on a path for a number of years afterwards to try to figure out, what is it about entrepreneurship? Can you learn it? Can you teach it? Are there methodologies behind it? Mm-hmm. So I went back to school, got my MBA, ended up doing three more startups after that and writing a book on entrepreneurship and innovation by Wiley. Mm-hmm. And then I tripped into academia and mm-hmm. running entrepreneurship centers, first at mm-hmm. RPI and then University of Colorado Boulder. And then came this great opportunity, which is the Stanford Latino Entrepreneurship Initiative.
Great.
And it intersects my passion for Latinos and opportunities and equal playing field mm-hmm. and celebration of what Latinos are doing together with entrepreneurship, which I understand well.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about the initiative?
Sure. So the initiative was founded by Dr. Jerry Porras, who's Mexican-American, a professor mm-hmm. here at Stanford University, mm-hmm. and a number of his former students that went to a graduate school of business, mm-hmm. Victor Arias, Frank Ramirez, Phil Pampa, and they all got together and decided to do something to change the wealth of Latinos. Because Jerry always says, you know, numbers aren't enough. If you really want to make a difference, you need wealth and numbers make a difference. And he talks about El Paso, over 40 years, 70% Mexican-American, but only one Latino mayor during that whole time. Mm-hmm. And so he says numbers aren't enough. So the idea was, how do you get wealth quickly into Latino communities? And so the focus was around entrepreneurship. That was mm-hmm. the thought. Entrepreneurship could make a difference. We see it. Microsoft made a difference in Seattle. Obviously, mm-hmm. all the companies here that made a difference in San Francisco, mm-hmm. Austin, Boston. You see it over and over again. Mm-hmm. So that was the idea. How do you make a difference? So the focus was around entrepreneurship and then around making big Latino businesses, billion-dollar businesses. Having 10 Mark Zuckerbergs with the name Carlos and Juan and mm-hmm. Julio and Maria and Isabella, mm-hmm. like that. So that's what we're focused on.
This is Atenea Americana. And today we're talking with Remy Arteaga. He is the executive director of LBAN and is today here talking with us about entrepreneurship and Latinos in entrepreneurship. I want to remind you that you can go to the Stanford Latino Entrepreneurship Initiative website, slei.us, and check out all the services and programs that they have available for innovators. There is something about immigration and being an immigrant that makes you already a little bit of entrepreneurs, because you are getting out of your comfort zone. You are into a new land with new languages. You already have to find your own path somehow.
That's great. You know, that's so. I've mentored over 1,000 startups. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were Latino startups or minority startups. Kids from the rural communities, Latino communities that struggle, where life is hard, the urban communities, same thing. And I say to them, I think one of the things that I got from growing up in that environment was an ability to think on my feet, to see opportunities where there are none, right? Mm-hmm. To see the problems and try to come up with solutions. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I think that growing up in those environments, you learn a lot of entrepreneurial principles without even being aware they're being taught.
you wrote a little bit about Latinos in entrepreneurship. How about how are those numbers in general? There is a lot of we hear a lot of these cases, you know, restaurants or the little shop or the little. Sure. But how about these companies, big companies that want to expand, as you say?
Sure.
What is the difference? I mean, I can imagine that there is a lot of people trying to make a shop, a store, something that sure. you know will work inside their communities. But are there also an important number of people making it globally or nationally?
Oh yes. I'll answer that in two parts. One, absolutely. There are around 50,000 to 60,000. Latino businesses in the United States that make over $1 million. In 2012, Latino businesses generated $420 billion in sales. They employ 2.5 million people. Mm-hmm. And that's at the current sizes that the Latino businesses are. The opportunity is even much greater. Mm-hmm. Latino businesses in general tend to be smaller than non-Latino businesses. And we did an analysis at Slay and looked at what would happen if Latino businesses averaged the same sales that non-Latino businesses did in 2012. And we found out that instead of $420 billion, they would generate closer to $2 trillion. And so that difference between the $2 trillion and close to $500 million, we call the opportunity gap. We see the opportunity to really rise quickly in those numbers. And so why is it that we started asking, are the Latino businesses smaller? So people normally jump to, well, you know, they're opening small shops here and there. I said, well, that's most businesses. Mm-hmm. Most businesses in the United States are small, period. Mm-hmm. So that's not it. Well, it's the industries that you enter. Well, not really. We did analysis where we took away the variable of industries and we were still smaller. So what else is it, you know? And so we're looking at those things. We're saying we believe part of it is this idea that a lot of Latino businesses launch because the family wants to pass it on to their children. Mm-hmm. And so if you start a business with the idea that you're going to pass it on to your children, that means you're not going to get other people involved. Mm-hmm. That means you're not going to go for angel funding or venture capital funding because they get equity. Mm-hmm. And they want an exit. They want, in other words, to sell it to somebody else so everybody makes a lot of money. So a mindset could be part of it. We also think it's knowledge, the skill sets. Mm-hmm. They may not understand how to scale companies, but you can say that about a lot of businesses. Mm-hmm. But how about mentors? You know, having mentors that are there to help you make those right decisions, that's a big deal. I had no mentors. Mm-hmm. You know, I think when I was graduating high school, the way I decided the university to go to, because there was a lot of universities pamphlets I'd gotten, was by the brochure. I looked at who had the prettiest brochure, and I went there. Nobody's told me, hey, you know what, this school might be better, that school might be worse, more opportunity. I looked at a brochure. What else? No one in my family had gone to college, right? And when I launched my businesses, I couldn't go to anybody and say, listen, this person wants to do this type of deal. What should I do? You know, I had to figure it out, go read books, try to, you know, and learn by making a lot of mistakes. But mentors are a big deal. And then those mentors bring you access to capital so you can grow your business.
I remember in a conference, it was about Latinas or women in general, angels, investors, and venture capitalists. Person that is going to interview, they tend like way more times to give money to people that look like them.
Oh, yeah.
Or that they feel like them, or that, I know, somehow they can connect. Also need people that gets into those positions, into a venture capital company, into an angel investor company, and start looking like, so they can actually play in the field and see, hey, let me consider you.
Right.
Because maybe you look or don't look like me, but I'm used to nobody looking like me. But anyway, I'm going to consider you because you don't look like me or...
Yeah. It's interesting because if somebody says that in a corporation, right, if I was running a corporation, said, well, I didn't hire Isabella because she doesn't look like the other people that I've hired in the past, which are mainly males, right?
Yeah.
We have a term for that, right? If I said, I don't want to hire Juan because he doesn't look like the other employees around me who are white, we have a term for that, right?
Yeah.
But when venture capitalists say they don't invest in an Isabella or Juan because they don't look like the people they've invested in the past have been successful, it's called pattern recognition. So they came up with a term for it here in the capital community, and so that's what it's called, right? And the idea is that, well, if I invest my money, right, or my investor's money, the partner's money, I have a responsibility to ensure that the company I invest in is going to do well. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that the only companies in recent memory that I've invested in that did well were 20-something-year-old white males from Stanford or Harvard or MIT. And so if you're not a white male that's from those schools, then you're outside of that pattern that I'm used to investing in to make successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the way around that? Well, I think women entrepreneurs are a good model. In the early 2000s, women entrepreneurs faced similar situations. There was only 4% at the time, roughly 4% of startups were women founded, and only about 4% of the angels were women. And so what did they do? Well, they started doing programs like we're doing here with Slay. They started to invest in women. You know, women started to invest in women. And what happened? Over the next 15 years, as you move forward, that 4% jumped into 23, 24% of women-founded startups. And guess what? The angels, the percentage of women angels, around 27, 28%. So both of them grew at the same time. And so in all likelihood, Latinos are going to have to invest in Latinos. We are going to do the work that we need to get the word out. We are going to try to change perceptions that are out there without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have great partners who are not Latino partners. But ultimately, Latinos are going to start investing in Latinos. I already see that happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the two will grow together. Now, here's an interesting bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
With venture capital, the percentage of women-backed venture capital firms is still the same roughly now than it was in early 2000. That didn't change. And the percentage of women VCs didn't change much either. So without women in the VC role, the pattern recognition wasn't able to alter. And so in all likelihood, that'll happen the same year.
This is Atenea Americana, and I am your host, Isabel Jubes. You may find this and all my shows at StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. This is a bilingual cultural show bringing you a window to the Latin and Hispanic universe. Every week for 2 hours, one in English and one in Spanish, from Stanford to the world. You can also be part of this, leaving me your comments, sharing your thoughts, and even more at StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. I invite you to be part of this.
Remember that today we're talking with Remy Arteaga from the Stanford Latino Entrepreneurship Initiative Fellowship. You can find all their programs in slei.us. And as usual, all the links in this program will be in our website at StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. Do you have any numbers? How many VCs have agents that are Latinos?
No solid numbers. I think because there's so few, right? So in the Silicon Valley area, I've been able to identify two or three Latinos that are part of venture capital firms out of all the venture capital firms that are around here.
Mm-hmm.
It's something we're going to look into. I don't think we're spending a lot of time on it. We are involved in the diversity equation, and so we're opening conversations with venture capital firms. We want to speak to the Kleiner Perkins of the world and the Andreessens of the world, who are saying that they really are interested in diversity, and we have some ideas how you can go about doing that. So hopefully in the coming years, we'll dig into that a little bit.
Yes, in the last couple of years, big companies open their numbers, open their records, showing up how many employees they have. And they're also opening new initiatives to help even the numbers to be more compared to the population there is around here. Like, right. Well, this population is mainly, it looks like this, but our company doesn't look at all like the people that is living around here. Why is that? So they're trying some things. They're opening a few programs. How is that helping? Is that moving? Is not enough? Is
well, so it looks like certain companies have done things that have made a difference. Intel released their numbers recently, and it looked like they progressed dramatically over the last few years. The Google and Facebook, a lot of times what people will discuss is the fact that it's a pipeline issue. Pipeline meaning there's not enough qualified Latinos and Latinas that they can go and hire, right? And so to that, I often open up the discussion to the following. I say, well, let's think about baseball for a little bit. And let's go back to the days when blacks were not allowed in Major League Baseball. And they had the Negro Leagues, right? Mm-hmm. So if you talk to baseball owners at the time about the types of players they wanted to recruit, they all wanted to recruit white players. Mm-hmm. And was it because there weren't any good players in the Negro Leagues? And the answer to that is obviously no, because the second that door was open, there were plenty of good players. Mm-hmm. Was it the fact that they weren't looking into the Negro Leagues for potential talent? The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. They weren't looking there, right? Mm-hmm. So if they only looked within Major League Baseball, never looked outside of it, it would remain predominantly white. And it's much more complex than that, but I use that as kind of an analogy as to the way situation is. So if Google and Facebook, if the CEOs of that company and the COOs and the CFOs all say we can only hire from the top 10 universities around the country, and those top 10 universities have the fewest percentage of Latinos from all the universities around the country, then guess what? Yeah, it will always be a pipeline. Yes. But it's because they defined the pipeline such that it excluded Latinos to begin with.
Mm-hmm. And also, if they are open to bring people from other places, they normally bring the family, their friends, the connections to the people that is already there. So those are the populations that are growing.
Yeah, so again, it's human nature, right? Yeah. We want to go and hire the people we like, the people that we hang out with, the friends. So if you find that you don't have diversity in your organization and you believe that's valuable, then you need to take conscious effort to change that. So we have a space in Palo Alto called the Lugar, right? Mm-hmm. The place, the Lugar. Mm-hmm. And it's a co-working space for Latino entrepreneurs in there. And guess what? We have non-Latino startups in there, right? Now people say, oh, why'd you do that? I said, well, we also believe in diversity. Yeah. It's good to have other people with other ideas. Now, we've thought about it consciously. Mm-hmm. We're also 50% women and 50% male. How do we get that way? It wasn't by accident. Mm-hmm. We thought about it ahead of time, and we assumed, guess what? We'll make the assumption that women and men are equally capable. We'll make the assumption that black, white, and brown are equally capable, and then we'll recruit from that instead of making different assumptions. So I think you can make a difference. You just have to change your mindset to do so.
Great. And how do you apply to any of these fellowships and the incubator and all the ideas you're having? Yeah.
So if you're interested in the SLEI Fellowship, you can go to slei.us. And the fellowship is a six-week program to help Latino business owners grow very large businesses. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredible program. It was developed by Stanford University, the Graduate School of Business Executive Education Program. Mm-hmm. And if Stanford was delivering this program by themselves, they would charge around $15,000. It cost us $6,500, but we're only charging $300. Mm-hmm. So it's a great opportunity for $300 to really get a world-class education. Mm-hmm. We also connect them with mentors, and we connect them with VCs and angels. Mm-hmm. So if you are in a business where you think you might need any of those, I would recommend to apply. Our first cohort is in October 17th, and it will run 6 weeks. And then the next cohort will be in the spring. And we get Latino businesses from all over the country. It's not just Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. So we're going to Texas, New York, Chicago, throughout the country to find those Latinos.
Mm-hmm. And to get into the incubator in Palo Alto?
So there you want to email Jessica. Mm-hmm. So it's jessica@slei.us. Mm-hmm. And she'll get you started. So you can come by. And we're also located, if you want to just stop by, mm-hmm. 3430 West Bayshore Road in Palo Alto, California. And again, mm-hmm. the co-working space is free. So just come by, we'll schedule you in, and you mm-hmm. can meet a whole bunch of other Latino entrepreneurs and capital.
Yeah, and non-Latinos, as you say. So
absolutely.
Anyone out there who has a little enterprise that want to give it a try in Palo Alto, in the heart of Silicon Valley, well, you know where to go.
Absolutely. Yes, you do.
Great. And what are the next steps? Or you already have your hands full with this, not that you need anything else, but how are you scaling?
Sure. So the other aspect of it, that's the education program, which is the fellowship. Mm-hmm. We're also doing research, and we're announcing the first part of our research, which is our policy report on November 11th at Stanford mm-hmm. University. And it's mm-hmm. going to be a big event. Being held at CEMEX there, which holds over 500 people, and it's going to be live streamed throughout the whole country. And that's going to talk about our survey that we did. So we did the first ever national survey of Latino business owners that mm-hmm. wasn't based on the U.S. Census data. All the other reports you see mm-hmm. are reports based on gathering the data from U.S. Census and then interpreting it and generating a report. We actually went out and spoke to Latino business owners. We created a database of 1.4 million Latino business owners, which mm-hmm. is by far the largest database out there. Yeah. And we created a panel of 2,500 business owners that answered our questions. And our report that talks about the opportunity gap and the scaling issues will be on November 11th. And we're hoping, right now we're speaking to Fortune 100 CEOs, mm-hmm. Which we expect to have four of them there. Stanford University President Hennessy has mm-hmm. already committed to being there, and we'll have a panel. It's going to be quite the event. It'll be a lot of fun.
Great. Great. So we wish you, well, all the success, of course, and we'll be keeping an eye and probably reporting, well, for sure reporting on your findings in November.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you.
And this was Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Stanford, 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin universe.
This is
Radio Atenea Americana.
Bilingual House of Culture, on the air and online.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Vuelve pronto.
Atenea Americana.
From Stanford to the world.
Remember to come back soon.
Ciao.
See you later.